Buck Studio in Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, cooking at home, what does that say about what you will choose when you eat out? Mm-hmm. And more on e-cigarettes. High school students, is this the gateway to the drug called tobacco? And what should we do about it as a society?
What's our recipe?
Bob's Butternut Squash Risotto, if you like risotto. And I like risotto, you will like this recipe.
And Bob, he'll be on the phone with us for the recipe. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. A line is open now for you as we welcome our first caller, a listener with us now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello there. It's a real pleasure to hear you.
Thanks for the call. How can we help?
Well, I've got a problem that's been going on probably about 5-6 years. That is toenail fungus. Now, I've tried, I guess, all of the usual home remedies, and I've tried a couple of things over the counter, and nothing has helped. Mm-hmm. I've even gone so far as to have a couple of my toenails removed, hoping that when they grew in again, they would come in a normal fashion.
Ooh.
But no, it's the same old thing again.
Ooh, that's
now, it isn't painful or anything, but it is annoying and it is bothersome, shall we say, and it looks like the devil.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us some of the home remedies you've tried for this?
Well, the only one I can remember right off the top of my head is Listerine.
So putting Listerine on your toes, I bet that wasn't very effective.
Or else drinking a lot of Listerine.
Well, Listerine, that's exactly right. Listerine has a tremendous amount of alcohol. In fact, all the mouthwashes have a tremendous amount of alcohol. That's one of the things that down-and-out alcoholics go after when they can't do anything else. That's not going to do anything. Vicks VapoRub isn't going to do anything. How long have you had it for?
Could be 4 or 5 years, something like that.
Okay.
And I've got it now on all of my toenails.
Right. Once you get it on one, sometimes you'll get it on all. By the way, toenail fungus is most common in the great toe. It's common with trauma. And my toenail fungus on my great toe started when I was trying to fix a shower stall door. Now, I am a non-fixer. Usually the way I fix things is to dial and make a phone call.
Go to the phone,
but in this case, I felt really good. I said, I can do this. I picked up the door and bang, it hit my toe and the fungus then went into my toe after the black and blue mark was there. Now, have you taken an oral medication, Lamisil, L-A-M-I-S-I-L?
No, haven't done anything, nothing oral.
Okay. There are a couple of things I recommend. First of all, over-the-counter remedies that are folk remedies do not seem to work for fungus. And when you look at prescription remedies, they're only about 80% effective. So in other words, they're not 100% effective either, but they're 80% effective with 1 or 2 cycles. The thing I would recommend is Lamisil generic, 250 milligrams daily, generic. And the way the drug is given is the best way to give it is you take it for 7 days. You're off for 3 weeks. You take it for 7 days. You're off for 3 weeks. And you take it for 7 days and you're done. That's basically 3 cycles of 7 days, basically with 21 days in between. Very effective, 80% effective, and it works.
There's another. Sounds pretty good.
There's it is. It is. It's very good. It really works. Now, for people who don't want to take an oral pill, there is something called Penlac, P-E-N-L-A-C. It's a generic nail polish that you put on the nail. You got to put it on it every day, and I think it's every day for about 12 weeks to 16 weeks. It tends to be effective, not quite effective as the Lamisil. And then there's a new prescription expensive medication, which is also topical. But frankly, the Lamisil, now that it is generic, is the way to go. It is highly effective. Works well, and it's probably covered by your insurance plan. Years ago, it wasn't because it was a really expensive drug. So,
well, that's very, very helpful, doctor. I'll certainly get a hold of that medication that you have recommended and see if we can't get rid of this thing in the perhaps a month or two.
That would be great. Excellent. So good luck.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you, Tom.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for the call. Nobody ever thanks me.
No, I was just going to say that.
Of course, nobody has
minute,
any
wait
reason
a minute,
to.
Wait
I
a
never
wait
help
a minute,
anybody.
Wait a second. Wait a second. Thank you, Tom.
For what?
Well, I mean, you don't. When somebody says thank you, you don't say for what. You say you're welcome. Come on.
1-800-4-forgiving the phone number. 1-800.
There you got it.
1-800-462-7413. Toll free. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Fine. What's up with you?
Well, I had a complete knee replacement in April and had been on morphine for quite a few years and been having a recurring problem with diarrhea, the first of which was 26 days of diarrhea, whereupon I lost 43 pounds, which I needed to, but I don't recommend this type of diet. And I heard, I listen almost exclusively to public radio, and Ira Flatow has Science Friday. And on it, he had two surgeons, John Alvetti and Andrew Mueller. And they were talking about decreased diversity in the human microbe. They also talked about Clostridium bacillum colitis, which I seem to have been left with about twice a week with no provocation, just all of a sudden, you know. And also in the AARP magazine, I read an article by Catherine Duff about, and this is where you might want to block your ears, Tom, about taking capsules of frozen material to replace this before major surgery.
Frozen material. I wonder what that frozen material might be. Well, what you bring up, by the way, is sort of the new frontier in medicine. Poop. Poop is the new medical frontier that we're just beginning to understand. C. difficile, Clostridium difficile. It's in our gut. It's in everybody's gut. It's around. But when it takes over the gut, you often have diarrhea. It can be awful diarrhea. And it takes over the gut when we take antibiotics because it kills the good bacteria as well as the bad bacteria that we're taking the antibiotic for. And as a result, we can get a colitis, an inflammation of the intestine. Tell me about this diarrhea. How often do you have it?
About twice a week, and there's no provocation. I've also, because I listen to you guys every week, I've been adjusting my diet. I'm going more vegan than anything else, and thinking that this might be helpful. You know, I also take a probiotic, but it's again, it just all of a sudden it could be anywhere, and it just shows up.
Two things. First of all, when you say you're vegan, so you don't have any yogurt. Vegans don't have any yogurt in their diet.
I'm sorry, I do. I put that into my diet.
Because yogurt is very good. It's probably the best probiotic around, and it's cheap.
Really?
Cheaper than – it's lactobacillus, and lactobacillus are the good bacteria. And so, from a probiotic point of view, you want to take it. You want to avoid antibiotics. That's number two. And then a drug you can take – let's say you're worried about it. You're on a trip, and you're worried about this diarrhea. Imodium, which is over-the-counter loperidone. But it's in the name brand Imodium. Generic name is loperidone. 2 milligram tablets. And you can take up to 6 to 8 of those a day. They're not absorbed in the body and they slow down the gut. And that can be useful if you're going out to a show or a movie or you're with friends or you're going to the Wisconsin State Fair or a wedding. You don't want this thing to interfere with it or you're hiking. That's when I would take that. But we don't understand this chronic diarrhea issue at all. It's very poorly understood, and I think they're right on in saying it's our gut that's really – my gut feeling is that the gut is what it is. You like that?
Yeah.
The gut is what it is.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
Yeah, be sure you get up here from Florida to our Wisconsin state.
In February. In February.
Well, I've been talking to Carl, and I said I've cleaned out a couple of rooms up front of the house. Come on down.
We'll head out there. We'll do a show from your house. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And let's stay on diet, Zorba, for your first topic of the day. This is a study, I guess, which shows
you
that
guess.
If I
Come
cook
on.
At home a lot, I'm more likely to eat healthy food when
well,
I go out.
Well, first of all, let's look at what the study is. The study is the is a report in the Journal of Public Health Nutrition, but it's from something called the NHANES study, mm-hmm. which is a nutritional examination survey that comes out on a regular basis, looks at health for Americans. It's actually a big study, and they're not talking about cause and effect. They're just asking people questions. How often do you prepare food at home?
Right.
Okay, that's what they're. That's one of the questions they're asking.
Right.
How often do you eat out in a week? What did you do in the last week?
Right.
And they get an idea. And I think it's a pretty accurate idea of who prepares food at home and who doesn't, because people know that. And they look at dinner, because a lot of people will have a little breakfast, not much. That's me.
Yeah.
And they'll often eat lunch out, because you're eating lunch out, you're not coming home. So the question is dinner, because dinner is the most common meal you prepare at home. And roughly half the people, that's a lot, reported cooking dinner at home. Now, cooking dinner at home might be putting frozen pizza in the oven, and it might be preparing a risotto like we're going to do today, but it means you're cooking something at home. And they found that people who cooked at home, no matter what it is, did you cook at home? Did you make food at home? Were more likely to eat lower calorie foods when they went out, when they chose fast food. In other words, just the idea of preparing food and thinking about food at home is an educational process that then begins to change your behavior when you're eating a fast food.
Well, I question that.
Go ahead, question.
The cause and effect, you say, wasn't determined.
Absolutely wasn't determined.
It seems to me going out and eating hamburgers and hot dogs, I'm very much less likely to cook at home. Mm-hmm. If I cook at home than when I go out. I'm used to eating the healthy diet, and so I'll eat healthier when I go out.
Yeah, but this is looking at dinner. It's people who had hamburgers and hot dogs for dinner at a fast food restaurant were less likely to make good choices than people who bought things at the grocery store. So I may eat a hamburger and hot dog for lunch. That doesn't count. I might eat it for breakfast, frozen pizza for breakfast. It's, did I have a hamburger? Am I more likely to have a hamburger at dinner or prepare food at home for dinner? Do you follow me? In other words, it's specifically the dinner meal.
I'm just saying it's a mindset that's in place whether you eat or cook in.
I agree with you. But the real question is, if you take people who eat out and at dinner, and don't prepare food at home, and you say, hey, why don't you prepare meals a couple of times a week at home, will they begin to eat better and make healthier choices? In other words, are people who take burgers and hot dogs at dinner educable?
The better question is, if you say to me, if you want to cook at home a little bit, don't you think you'd eat better when you went out? What would I likely say?
I don't know what you would like.
Do you think I would say, good ideas?
No, I don't know.
I'm
going to
start cooking at home.
That's it. But wait a second. Just to carry this out, what if you came in the office and you had a BMI of 32 and you wanted to look better, and you wanted to look better for that girlfriend or that boyfriend who's hot, who you like, and you want to help them, and they're a young person and they eat out all the time.
Yeah.
I said, if you start cooking at home, you might lose weight because you'll eat better. Yeah. Then what would you say?
I'd say, attach it to sex. First of all,
and maybe you'll get an answer.
I'd say, first of all, I'm looking pretty good right now. And second of all, I have a really sexy girlfriend I've been living with for a whole long time, so I don't need this healthy diet stuff.
That's it, the devil. The devil's in the details.
1-800-462-7413. Toll free. 800-462-7413. To the phones again now, Zorba. We welcome a listener in Helena, Montana. Hi.
Thanks, Tom and Dr. Zorba, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. We really enjoy your show. About 6 weeks ago, I fell and hit my left elbow. About 5 days later, I went to our clinic, and my elbow had swelled up about an inch, and they swabbed across it, and about 2 to 3 ounces of a fairly clear liquid drained out on the floor. They bandaged it, gave me an antibiotic to take. Well, a week went by. It stayed enlarged. I went back to see an orthopedic surgeon, and he bandaged it. Actually, it was in a cast for a week, and another antibiotic. went back a week later, and he recommended surgery. He said something had gotten in there. He said, but it was not necessary. So I declined the surgery, and just, should I have taken the surgery? There was no pain involved.
Well, how's your elbow?
Right now, it's okay. Uh-huh. It has reduced. It's still, there's some loose skin. It still hangs down about a half inch. It's loose skin. But it actually had a little bit of a discharge, which pretty much has ended now.
So, first of all, when a surgeon says you don't have to have surgery, that, on the whole, is good advice.
Well, he recommended
Tom, like,
he said, if you were a member of my family, I would recommend
it. Recommended, but said you don't have to do it. That's always a good sign that it's optional. When surgery is optional, surgery is optional. And I usually take the option of not having surgery and seeing what Mother Nature does. It sounds like you probably had an olecranon bursitis. And the olecranon, this is a bone part in the elbow. And what happens is, you know, we bump our elbow. I bump my elbow numerous times on a chairlift, getting up on a chairlift, and my elbow, when that happens, will periodically, swell up. And I know there's fluid inside there. It doesn't open up because it doesn't have an opening. If it did, the fluid would come out and be kind of clear and sometimes a little bit sticky. And for the most part, we usually don't do anything about that. Mother Nature heals. It gets better. The issue is making sure you don't bump your elbow, and that means, when you're sitting in a car, especially, driver's seat or passenger seat, whatever elbow that is, not to bump it when you're driving in the car and you're putting your arm on the door. That's one of the places. Or on an armchair, in the kitchen, in the bathroom, and so on. But I wouldn't have surgery on it unless it kept on recurring. Not at all. I think the surgeon who said you didn't need surgery gave you good advice. So my recommendation is spot on.
Ah, good. It was x-rayed. It didn't show anything broken. They did take an x-ray.
Yeah, and an x-ray, then it gives you reassurance that you're not dealing with something that isn't good beneath the skin. So keep it up and keep from bumping it.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from Logan, Utah listener named Manal. She writes, "Dear Zorba and Tom, I'm a huge fan of the show and a weekly listener ever since I came to the U.S. 3 years ago. You guys have a lot of fans in Utah, by the way. Here is the situation. Every time I eat anything with a prominent garlic taste, such as hummus, Alfredo sauce, etc., I get badly swollen tonsils. Then, in a day or two, this will develop into pain in my ears, and it feels like a terrible flu. I've asked several doctors on various occasions, and I cannot get an answer. What do you think?"
First of all, you can become allergic or sensitive to pretty much any vegetable products such as garlic. On the other hand, you want to see if it's the garlic or if it's something else besides the garlic that's in it. So the first thing I would do to see if it's really the garlic, if it were me, is I would actually take some garlic and chop it up and put it in my mouth and just garlic with nothing else, which is not good, and see whether or not I swelled up from that. I'd want to know, is it the garlic?
Yeah.
Because there's other stuff in there. Well, if you don't swell up from the pure garlic, then it is not the garlic, and it's something else.
Yeah,
so I would test that.
What if you do?
Well, if you've got a true food allergy, which is unusual, you have to avoid that food. And it's the same with garlic. Or you have to take, before you go out and have, we'll say, garlicky Italian food, you have to take over-the-counter Allegra. Zyrtec would be even better, 5 to 10 milligrams of Zyrtec, or Claritin, a couple of tablets, at least an hour or two before you eat. You might be able to keep from having that reaction, and that might help you. But I'd first check to see if it's garlic with just pure garlic. My guess is it's not the garlic. There may be something else going on, and that's how you check for it.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or through Facebook.
We have a listener recipe coming up. I think you'll like it. More of your calls, of course, some emails to talk over, and our medical myth buster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba Recipe Time, and for our recipe this time around, we are happy to welcome La Crescent, Minnesota listener Bob Huff. Now, this is Bob's Butternut Squash Risotto. How'd you come up with the recipe?
Actually, I found it somewhere and I've modified it a little bit, but I can't remember where I found it from.
Before we do the recipe, so where do you get your risotto rice, which is arborio rice?
Okay, I buy that at our co-op, and it's about $3 a pound. And I was on the internet looking at the different kinds of arborio rice, and you can pay anywhere from $1 to $25
right,
a pound for
it. It's very, very interesting. Now, I think getting it from your co-op, about $3 a pound is probably about right. I wouldn't do the dollar a pound stuff because I don't think it's as good. So let's do the recipe. Start out with 4 cups of chicken stock.
And you could use veggie broth if you're a vegetarian.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Generally, if you buy low-sodium chicken broth or low-sodium veggie broth or low-sodium beef broth, which I wouldn't use with this, but the chicken or veggie, you get more flavor. And there was an article in Cooks Illustrated, one of my favorite magazines, if not my favorite Cooks magazine for cooking, that showed that the reason that they had to put more chicken flavor in the chicken stock when they reduced the salt, that the salt basically was a filler, kind of like a filler. So I would use a low sodium. I think it'll taste better. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
Correct.
1 cup of arborio rice bought at your local co-op or on the net. A small minced onion. What kind of onion you use? Regular onion?
I use yellow onion.
A butternut squash peeled, cubed, and cooked. So tell me how you do that.
Well, you have to slice it, peel it and then slice it and take the seeds out. Mm-hmm. And, butternut squash can come in all sizes, so I would say 2 to 3 cups. And you want to make sure that it's smaller cubes, not, less than an inch thick, because you want that to cook with the rice.
Uh-huh. And then how do you cook it? Do you pre-cook it?
No, you add it as you start the risotto. Mm-hmm. You actually put the garlic and the butternut squash into the skillet and cook it with the rice.
And like you say, they're 1-inch cubes. That would be important with that. 2 tablespoonfuls of butter.
Right.
2 teaspoons of salt and 2 teaspoons of pepper and 2 garlic cloves. 1/4 cup of chopped pecans. Now, that's interesting.
Yes. I love pecans.
I love pecans. So whenever you can put in pecans, I don't usually think of pecans as something I'm going to use in savory cooking, which is good. And 1/3 cup of feta or gorgonzola, which is better?
I like the gorgonzola.
You like the gorgonzola.
But both, I think you'd be satisfied with either one.
So let's make it. So in a saucepan, bring the chicken broth to a boil. Reduce the heat. Keep warm because you're going to slowly add this to risotto. Now in a skillet, heat the olive oil, onion, and saute for 2 minutes. Add the risotto rice, and stir until it's coated for 1 minute. Very, very important to get that coated with the olive oil.
Without browning it, too. But you want to coat it.
You want to coat it. That's kind of a critical step. And if you don't take that step, it's not going to work. It's not going to taste good. Add garlic, add the squash, stir for about 30 seconds, lower the heat, and then keep on adding. Add 1/2 cup of hot stock, stir it well until the liquid absorbs, and you keep on adding the stock slowly until the liquid absorbs, and that takes about 20 minutes, standing on the stove. When you stand by the stove and do it and your friends are around, do you sit, have a beer or have a glass of wine?
I was going to say, I follow the Galloping Gourmet method of cooking. So you pour yourself a glass of wine before you start. This gets you into the Zen attitude of cooking.
I like that. And I remember the Galloping Gourmet. What a great name, the Galloping Gourmet. Yeah. I don't know if I ever galloped, but it was the Galloping Gourmet, but that's it. But, I do that too. I have a glass of wine with dinner quite often, but I like, as soon as I'm going to start dinner, I pour myself a glass of wine. I don't do it. I don't do it if I'm pulling something out, but if I'm making something. And it's funny, but I wonder if that comes from the Galloping Gourmet. I haven't thought about that, but I want it.
Oh, yes. You always had a glass of wine.
That's exactly it. And especially with this recipe, because you can't add everything at once. You've got to add it, absorb it.
Right. You need to be relaxed and patient, and you're making this food so everybody will enjoy it. Makes it really nice.
And people are watching, and they're commenting, and they're standing right. around, and all that. Then we remove from heat, add the butter, a little salt on top, top with feta cheese and chopped pecans or gorgonzola and chopped pecans. This is a delicious recipe. I think this is something that a lot of our listeners are really going to love and do.
Now, how many will this serve, Bob?
This serves about four. If you're just serving it as a main course, mm-hmm. if it's a side dish, it would go farther. And I would recommend if you're doing it with, as a main dish, then you make a nice salad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, good idea.
I'm going to make this. I like this. I like this recipe. Yeah. I'm going to make it. Thank you, Bob. Thanks for sharing this recipe. I'm sure that our listeners will love this.
Well, you guys keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and keep on listening. And Zorba, with the wine and cooking, mm-hmm. if you have some wine while you're cooking, yeah. uh-huh. it makes that mm-hmm. arduous task of cooking a lot more pleasant if you can have a couple of glasses of wine while you're doing
it. Wait a second. He said have some wine. He didn't say have a couple of glasses of wine or three or four, half the bottle of wine. But yes, for the non-cooker, that's exactly it. I wonder how people could get a copy of this recipe.
Well, before I tell you, for sending us this original recipe, Bob gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our listener recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original Heart Healthy recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you come to our website, ZorbaPastor.org, you can get this recipe. Yeah. Tom, you could get it too. You could just dial it up on your AOL, AmeriCom line, on your modem, Tom. You could dial it up on your modem.
I want to get it in the mailbox.
And you can get this recipe. You get it in the mailbox. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And if you've ever heard of Facebook, you can find us on it.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Laval, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I have appreciated listening over the many years, and some of my health is due to the great advice I've gotten from. Thank you, first of all, for that.
Well,
how
thank
nice
you.
Is that?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Very, very, very nice of
how
you.
Can
thank
we
you
help
so
you
much.
This time?
Okay. 25 years ago, I was hospitalized for all the comorbidities of severe obesity, and I had the good fortune of having a good family doctor, and as at the end of the week, when they finally got my blood sugars down and my blood pressure under control, one thing another, he put his arm actually around me and said, you know, you were dealt this hand, the real way to defeat this would be to get your health under control and lose weight. And so I thought, well, gosh, if it means that much to him, maybe I ought to do that. So I went at it, actually, Zorba, and did that. And 25 years later, I just finally celebrated my golden goal. I weigh the amount I lost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I weigh 172, and I lost 170.
Oh,
congratulations
my goodness.
On that. Wow.
That is a ton of weight. That is so unusual, so unusual.
You do it by exactly the things that you've said over the many years. You just put together a lifestyle and diet and so on. So, but my question today is this. Because my waist reduced from about 56 to now 32.
Jeez.
I have this excess skin, and actually it's painful. I do wear some compression shorts to hold it up, but like if I do push-ups, it looks like stalactites
right.
hanging down. And it's hard to find, actually, a surgeon that actually understands this has to be, I've got to do something with that. And what he says, it's almost like what my doctor describes it as is, it's almost like a female that needs a breast reduction, only it's lower
right.
in my
right.
abdomen. And right. so this is my question to you. How can I find someone that understands that?
I would look for a plastic surgeon. Because plastic surgeons do this, and I would look for a plastic surgeon that does liposuction or a surgeon that does liposuction, because that's where something like this would occur. It is a it's a cosmetic procedure, although you might end up getting it covered by your insurance plan with a pre-authorization if you can show that it's a medical malady. But I would think that a surgeon that does liposuction or a plastic surgeon is somebody who is more likely to do this. And I know just what you're talking about, because I've seen patients in my office who lose weight, not as much weight as you do, but the skin, it's kind of interesting, the skin is stretched and it doesn't have the same elasticity and it doesn't pull back the same way. If you were 20 and you lost a ton of weight, it might pull back, but the elasticity just isn't there. Once you get past a certain age, we tend to all sag, and that's what this is. Have you gone to a plastic surgeon ever, or a surgeon who does liposuction?
I went to a plastic surgeon once, and what happens is they begin to ask questions, well, why this and why that, and I think they have a hard time getting their head around the fact that I lost so much weight, because there's just so much skin there that they think something else is wrong.
So I thought
what I need is somebody that actually understands this at the get-go.
Right. I would say what you need is a surgeon who does liposuction. They may not be the one to do it, but they would be the one to recommend it, because that is a side effect of liposuction. Liposuction is remove all this fat, and all of a sudden you're left with the skin hanging there. So that's the way to go. That's where I would go for the expertise. And there's somebody in your area who does liposuction or within 100 miles, and they're the ones I would call, speak to the surgeon. And they might not do it, but they may know somebody who does it. And that's what you need. That would be somebody who would understand it from the get-go.
I never thought of that. So I appreciate the advice.
Yeah. How many push-ups can you do?
I tell you what, I do a routine every day. I'm just getting dressed to do it. I do a routine of 50 push-ups, I do 50 sit-ups, 50 leg lifts, about a dozen pull-ups, and then I run 3 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. You are a strong guy. A dozen pull-ups? That is a lot of pull-ups and 50 push-ups.
Yeah, those are the hardest.
Yeah, those are the hardest, the push-ups. So have you always been athletic? Were you athletic when you were younger?
I was the chief nerd. I was always the fattest nerd, and it's bizarro world when I see my high school friends. They are now fat, and I am now fit.
The ultimate high school reunion.
Yeah.
They are fat,
everybody's
and you are
fantasy.
Fit. Right, everybody's fantasy. You got it.
But you folks have actually given me, over the years, good advice, different times, good advice. You've always been slightly ahead. I was thinking today, you knew Bulgarian yogurt, for example, before anybody heard of Greek yogurt.
Thank you. That is exactly it. And Bulgarian yogurt is like Greek yogurt, yes.
Yeah.
But now I have to figure out, I'm going to my 50th high school reunion. I now have to figure out, I mean, I happen to be around the same weight, but I love the packaging. I'm going to go there and think of you, because I'm going to look at all the overweight, I can't say the word fat, I'm a doctor, overweight and overnourished people at that. The ultimate fantasy, as Tom said. You're the nerd, and you'll get to see the football players who have these beer bellies.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for the great advice and so on over the years, because I've listened to it for many years. So
great. Thanks so much for the call.
You bet.
At 800-462-7413.
I just love the fantasy. I can just picture it.
You know, we have some beer bellies listening to us. And
yes, we do. Yes, we do. However, they may take advice from this guy. You can lose weight. Look at him. 170 pounds?
50 push-ups?
You know, that's pretty incredible. Highly motivated and did it over time and kept it off. Quite unusual.
Before the break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Mary Beth. She writes, I am an older mother considering adopting an infant, and I would like to breastfeed the baby. My understanding is that since I breastfed my first child, that I would be able to trigger breastfeeding for another child. Here's my question. Is there a place to have my breast milk tested? Although I generally eat organic foods and am very conscientious about my exposures, I'm concerned about toxins from my body in the milk. So, before I venture into breastfeeding again, I would want to test my own milk. Do you know where there is a lab that provides the service?
Well, first of all, I don't know if she's going to be able to breastfeed. I mean, she hasn't been pregnant, and I don't think just a child suckling on your breast produces breast milk. Now, I may be wrong on that, but and I may stand corrected, so there may be someone out there who says, yes, there are ways to breastfeed so you can actually get the breast milk going again. There may be some hormones that she can also take that may help her. That's number one. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether or not she's going to be able to succeed in breastfeeding. Once a woman stops breastfeeding, usually the milk dries up and it doesn't come back. You know, it doesn't come back with that. Getting breast milk tested, I don't think I'd worry about the toxins. I mean, breast milk is it's not a toxic thing. When we tell a mother she should breastfeed, we don't check her milk for toxins. You know, we just look at what she may be taking in terms of medications.
It wouldn't make any difference adopted or...
Not at all. I don't think it would make any... you can certainly go to ask your hospital to test it, mm-hmm. and there may be a lab, and you'd have to pay a lot of money, but frankly, we don't check breast milk for toxicity. So it doesn't really occur unless you're taking a potentially toxic drug that's then excreted into the breast milk. For instance, if you were on a chemotherapeutic drug, that would be something. It's what you take when you're breastfeeding that really counts and makes a difference. But getting back to the issue, I haven't heard that a woman can actually breastfeed when she has not had a baby. And if there's someone out there in radio land who can correct me and tell me how that can be done, I'd love to hear about it so we can actually share that with our listeners.
Have a question for the good doc? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have another interesting topic to talk over. That's coming next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, another study, Zorba, on e-cigarettes.
Right. So first of all, let me say I think e-cigarettes for adults should be allowed, just like tobacco products. I think people should smoke them if they want to smoke them. I think that if you say an e-cigarette is safe, you're incorrect. The answer is we don't know if an e-cigarette is safe. It takes 25 years to get, you know, lung cancer from mm-hmm. tobacco, and frankly, we don't know what e-cigarettes do. So the idea that they're safer than tobacco is incorrect. We don't know. They may be. So
before we get to the topic, quick. You think that e-cigarettes should be legal? Should they be regulated
Absolutely
the same as cigarettes?
You bet. They should be legal. We should regulate them. I don't want anyone sitting at a table next to me in a restaurant under an airplane blowing e-cigarette smoke in my face. I don't want that. I'm not at home, in their backyard, in their house, out of their house. That's their business. It's not mine. But the real issue is cigarette smoking has dropped in high school tremendously. It's dropped 50% since the year 2000. And e-cigarettes may be a gateway to tobacco or simply a gateway to an unhealthy behavior. And if we look at the number of e-cigarettes and the use in high school students, it is booming. If we look at the year 2013, about roughly 5% of the high school students used e-cigarettes at one point. If we look at the next year, it's now up to 12% of high school students have tried e-cigarettes. So it has gone from 5% to 12%, and it's now infesting, because it's an infestation, middle school students. Now, are e-cigarettes a gateway to tobacco products? Maybe. Or maybe they're a gateway to just a bad habit of smoking e-cigarettes, because once again, you've got to assume that any chemical you put into your lung is bad until it's proven otherwise. And I ask you, Tom, what chemical that you put into your lung is good other than air?
Yeah.
And the answer is air is good.
Yeah.
And e-cigarettes are not air. There's some chemical, sweet chemical, nicotine to get you addicted to it, all the other stuff. If you're an adult and if you're a smoker and you want to use them to quit, fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should think of these things as safe, and that's what people are doing.
And these things really are marketed to kids.
Absolutely. Kiosks
and
malls, and they're sweet, and they're tasty. And if you look at the ads, they're saying, take back the air. It's sexy. And they show handsome people. They're marketed to kids. And they're owned by tobacco companies. Tobacco companies are buying these up like hotcakes. Come on, America, wake up. You know, e-cigarettes should be legal for adults who want to take them to quit smoking or whatever. Realize something is going into your lungs that may be toxic. But for children, they should be regulated. Get them out of the marketplace where kids can buy them. The FDA should regulate them like tobacco so we are safe.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time again now for our Medical Mythbusters segment. Today's question comes to us from Inez of Edmond, Oklahoma. She writes, "Hello, Zorba and Tom. I am 6 months pregnant and have a question about pregnancy nutrition and weight gain. Is it true or a myth that when pregnant, your body will divert nutrition first to the fetus or baby, ensuring that the baby grows healthy, even if it is at the expense of the mother's health? And if so, why are we always told it is important to not diet and gain the appropriate amount of weight? Wouldn't the baby still grow so long as the mother was taking in enough calories and nutrients for the baby? I don't particularly want to force myself to gain more weight, but I trust your advice, so if you say so, I will."
Well, the general rule of thumb is to gain about 20 to 25 pounds, somewhere in that range. That's sort of been the traditional rule of thumb. I don't know who invented that number, but that is the number. And the reason is, first of all, if a woman gains too much weight, she's more likely to have a diabetes associated with pregnancy and all the problems with that. And it turns out the baby, a baby of a mother who gains too much weight, also appears to be more likely to become a diabetic as an adult. And it may be due to what is going on in utero. So if you gain too much weight, there can be a problem on that side. If you gain too little weight, there can be a problem in that, yes, the calories are diverted to the child, but the calories may not be enough for the child. So in other words, yeah, the child's going to get calories before you do, but it still may not be enough calories. And, you know, when you're eating for two and you're eating for a baby, it takes a lot of work to grow a baby. And for the placenta, that also does a lot of work in the mother. It's not just that the food goes to the baby. It's that you've got a placenta that is doing a lot of work and takes a lot of energy to actually be able to distribute the right nutrients to the baby. The placenta that we don't talk about much is actually one of the miracles in producing a child, and there's stuff we don't understand, a lot of stuff we don't understand about it.
All we know is you throw it away.
All we know is you throw it. When it's done, we throw it away, but baby, it's done a lot, but it's gone. The right amount of weight is not too much to become a diabetic and gain too much for yourself, and not to gain too little so that you don't have enough nutrients. And that Goldilocks amount used to be, when I delivered baby, 24 pounds. I love the number 24, not 25 and not 23. Shoot for 24 pounds. That's what I was taught.
You're at 21. You've got to gain some weight.
You've got to gain 3 pounds. Where did 24 come in?
Have a possible myth. Zorba can't wait to bust it.
Can't wait. Holding my breath.
Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Or don't forget, Facebook is your portal to Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener now in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba and Tom. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, my issue is we have a grandson that's more interested in playing and doesn't want to go to the bathroom when he should. And it would be fine if he was a tiny little kid, but he's now 7 years old. It used to be when he was younger where he'd be ready to go somewhere, he'd change him, and all of a sudden he'd pee in his pants. But now it's not only pee. It's not pee. It's the poop.
What do you do when he poops in his pants? Who cleans him up?
Well, he's been having to clean himself up.
Right.
He washes his own underwear now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So what's happened with that? How's that going for him, as we say?
It doesn't faze him.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, first of all, cleaning him, you know, as a seven-year-old, he has to clean up. You know, he has to clean up himself. And eventually that is going to stop. The reality is, if he's continuing to do it, and he's doing it outside and he hasn't changed, then you have to develop some other way of reinforcing good behavior. And that's the fact that if he does it, then he doesn't get to go outside as much. And he comes in. And that's it. That's what you do. I mean, if he's outside and he doesn't want to stop, then he doesn't get to go outside. So you have to take away something else that he likes to do. Usually cleaning up will work. I mean, that usually works. If mom or dad or grandpa or grandma clean up after them, often kids won't really care.
Could this be some sort of affliction, an involuntary thing?
No, he was fine for a while. He was fine. When did he restart this?
I'd say probably about 5 years old.
When he was
maybe.
Five?
Yeah. And he doesn't do the whole job, but he's enough to, soil that underwear.
Yeah. What about when he's in school? Does it happen when he's in school?
Not that much, and he's very lucky because once they start making fun of him, it's going to be a real problem.
Yeah. Well, what you've got to do is you want to reinforce good behavior. So one way to do that is to put stars in a calendar, and you get a certain number of stars, so you're poop free, and you get to do something that the child wants to do. And then you say, okay, it's you've been 3 days poop-free. Next time it's 5 days poop-free. Next time it's 10-day poop-free. And eventually, just that behavior, when you reinforce good behavior, you can stop giving the rewards for that. And you just make it longer and longer and longer. I would do that. And the second thing I would do is I would say going outside is something for a couple of hours is something you have to earn to do. If not, you only get to go outside for an hour. You don't pay attention to what you're doing. And I would take away that ability. It's kind of funny because as a doctor, I feel funny saying you can't go outside. But the reality is he has to stand up to what's appropriate for a 7-year-old. That's what I would do.
I
would discuss it with him and tell him what you're doing. And make it. It's not, he doesn't value it that much yet. And you want this to happen before he starts doing this in school because he will be made fun of. And then that's really hard to recover from. Because if he's known as the pooper in school, it will take years and years in middle school for him to lose that identity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have behavior problems then. Yeah.
Well, you already have a behavior problem with this.
Yeah.
But you'll have more. So reinforce it with stars on a calendar, more and more stars, and a reward afterwards. Talk to him about it, and then if he doesn't do it, limit the amount of outside activity and say, look, you can't go out for 2 hours. You can go out for 1 hour. And if he soils himself, okay, you can go out for a half an hour. And if he soils himself, then he doesn't get to go outside. Because then he's really engaging in behavior with you where he's saying, no, I'm going to soil myself. I have control and I'm just manipulating this for you.
Okay. We'll try that.
Try it. Good luck.
All righty. Thank you. You have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Appreciate the call. I just want to come back to this. There's no chance, Zorba, that this could be something that he can't correct.
I doubt
there's
it.
A medical thing going on.
I doubt it.
Because this happens before he's realizing that it's going to happen.
It's not happening in school. That's why I asked. Very rarely she said in school does it happen. The answer is it can be something medically that's going on. But usually that's going to happen 24/7 at home, in school, out in play. Even if it were, you would still want to reinforce activity because that's one way to know medically. Before you do a medical workup where you're going to start to do sphincter tones and a whole bunch of other tests, the way to do it is to see if it's behavioral. And remember, he had a period of time when he was able to hold his poop. So I would go for the behavioral first. But I think you bring up a good point. If the behavioral fails, then you want to look medically.
Before we head out, Zorba, time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's correction comes from a Dallas, Texas...
Wait a minute. Where's the music? It's supposed to be like bum, bum, ba-dum.
We don't have bum, music ba-dum, for Disagreeing ba-dum, with the ba-dum. Doc. We'll have to talk with Carl about that. Today's correction comes from a Dallas, Texas listener named Gene. He writes, Dear Zorba, on a recent show, you were talking about pine nuts leaving a bad taste in a person's mouth for weeks, even months. You said that the preservatives put on pine nuts cause this reaction in particular individuals. This is simply not so. Believe me, I am a pine nut expert. They need no preservative since they are self-preserving and will last years if they don't get too hot or moist and are kept in a sealed container. The problem is that some pine nuts from China are actually artistically formed pieces nut meat from acorns, handcrafted and even hand-painted on the ends with food dyes to look exactly like real pine nuts.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometimes the bitter taste isn't immediately detectable and appears hours after the fake nuts have been consumed, but this unpleasant side effect from eating the acorn nut can last quite a while. To avoid this problem, it's probably better to stick with the Middle Eastern schnorba or the Mexican pinolas. Everybody's entitled to a mistake or two, so I won't turn off your interesting program because of this. But you better be careful.
You know, mistake or two. I wish I had a mistake or two. That would be great if it was a mistake. Well, first of all, I knew the Chinese, quote, pine nuts, were the ones causing the problem. I didn't realize that
they weren't really pine nuts.
Yes, that they were acorns and they were painted with food dye because pine nuts are expensive, made to look like pine nuts. Look at how amazing it is. They will go to all that trouble because obviously it is a cheap way of trying to get into the American market. Yeah. So either pine nuts from Italy or pine nuts from America or, you know, as they say, from Mexico and so on. So I stand corrected. And I really appreciate that. I know about the Chinese ones. I thought it was the preservatives, but it was the paint or the dye or the acorn. Please, I'm going to stick with American or Mexican, like he said, or Middle Eastern.
Are you pining for attention?
Oh,
or perhaps
so good.
You think something Zorba said is just plain nuts. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Big Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1206Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.